Okay, this is Fabio Akira again for the Ruby on Rails Podcast Brazil, here from QCon San Francisco, and now with Nick Seeger from Sun and JRuby contributor. Hi, Nick. Can you introduce yourself for us?
Hi, Fabio. Thanks for inviting me to speak with you today. As Fabio said, I work at Sun Microsystems. I've been a member of the JRuby team for a while, a contributor, and I'm doing some work with JRuby and JRuby on Rails lately to make sure that we can run Rails efficiently and run it well and use JRuby as a viable alternative platform both for deployment and development for Rails applications. And in, also in my my actual day job, I actually do get paid to work on a Rails site at kenai.com, K-E-N-A-I. And it's Sun's new attempt at an open source project hosting website, and we're starting out fairly small. We're in beta mode, and we're looking at where we can add new features that you haven't seen before in that space.
Is that Kina?
Kenai?
Kenai?
Yeah.
What is this exactly?
So it's a website right now, similar to a SourceForge or a Google Code, where you can sign up. You can host projects there. We actually have a small invite-only mode right now, which is not a big impediment. If anybody's interested in trying it out, let me know. I can get invites, and it's just to let us, make sure that it doesn't grow out of control before we're ready to support that kind of volume. But so we're very early stages. We've only been live for 2 months.
Oh, okay. That's why I never heard about it.
Yeah.
So you can make any kind of web application and host there?
It's not for hosting web apps per se. It's for hosting source code.
Oh, for source code. Okay.
Source code and project related features like forums and mailing lists and wikis and so on. And we're going to be adding some features to it, some standard features, as well as hopefully some new features that you haven't seen before that.
Okay.
Make it compelling, and we're also kind of doing it as an exercise to try a Rails application at Sun, to try JRuby. We're deploying on JRuby on Rails as well.
Do you use JRuby inside Sun to create applications for internal usage or something like that?
There may be some of that happening. I know there are some other groups using JRuby to build websites. I'm not personally familiar with whether it's gotten a lot of wide use yet. I think the interesting thing about JRuby and the way it adapts so well to existing Java infrastructure is that people can start choosing to use it, and it's just another library.
Mm-hmm.
And typically it works so well that people don't even need to feel the need to report back to us that they're using it. So, I mean, Sun is a big company. I'm just in the developer tools group, which is on very small corner of the software business unit, and so there could very well be other people inside the company using JRuby, or even using Ruby for that matter.
And just to so people can understand the history here, because I think Ton and Charles were the main evangelists of JRuby. They started a project, and then you came along. How was this process of you came along becoming a core community?
Yeah, so it turns out that Charles and Tom are based in Minneapolis, and I'm based there as well. I lived there for quite a long time. And at my previous job, I had been a Java developer for probably 6 or 7 years, and started to tire of the verbosity that is Java. And I was looking for new tools to kind of help improve my workflow, like I typically do, like we all typically like to do. And JRuby looked really interesting, and so I actually started using JRuby as a way of lightly scripting Java. Eventually, a Ruby community started forming in Minneapolis, and I met Charles and Tom, and we became, became friends, and I started to contribute more and more to JRuby, and then eventually it seemed reasonable that I actually joined the team. And this was all before any of us had actually started working at Sun. So then Charlie and Tom got hired at Sun, I think probably 2.5 years ago or so, two years ago. As a result of all their great work, obviously based purely on that, and it was maybe a half a year or so later that Sun was looking to start a new Rails project, and they needed somebody to lead it up, and they apparently thought that I'd be a good person to do that. So I was fortunate to come aboard.
And how do you, is there some core piece that you work more, or in general you touch everything that's in JRuby?
As far as JRuby core goes, I know my way around fairly well, but I actually don't touch JRuby core a whole lot these days. I'll do things here and there. one of the things I did recently, which I probably need to get a blog post on out about, is actually back at RubyConf a couple weeks ago, I implemented some code that allows you to package up Ruby gems inside of jar files, so we can actually package Ruby gems in a jar file and actually package up an entire application, you know, Ruby gem based application in a jar file and just run it without having to unpack it anywhere, which could be kind of interesting. And so we could, I think that's a, you know, maybe a very small change, very small improvement, but hopefully let JRuby be even more portable than it already is.
Because nowadays, if you deploy a Rails application, you have to vendorize all the gems inside the Rails application.
Typically, yes. Yeah, and so what I did is you can put, basically if you look inside of a gem repository, right, so you have your gem path, and inside your gem repository you have several directories. You have a gems directory, a specifications directory, a doc directory, and a cache directory. So basically if you take those four directories and just put them inside of a jar file or a zip file and add that to your Java class path, JRuby will automatically pick up that Ruby gem path and add it in, and you can actually require gems out of that location. So now we can potentially, you know, maybe make prepackaged copies of bundles of gems that are tightly related. Maybe even take parts of like the MERB stack, for example, where you do have a lot of gems. You package them all together, and then you can easily put them into a web application and don't have to worry about the vendorizing process nearly as much. I hadn't really started to think about it that much, but it does sound kind of interesting the more we talk about it.
Yeah, because the one thing that's always difficult is dependencies. So if you have some neat way to make dependencies easier, that's going to be awesome. So this is something that's already ready, done, or you're still working
on it? Yeah, it's in JRuby trunk right now. It would go out with the 1.16 release whenever that hits, probably in a few weeks, I suppose. I think they're planning on to do a fairly quick release. 1.15 came out a few weeks ago now, but 1.16 would hopefully be not too far away.
And I think you have been working with the Rails source code itself.
Right. Yeah, so I forget exactly how it all started, but there's always been a lot of complaining about the way Active Record handles threads, and seems like coming from the Java world, having the background in the way Java applications typically handle connections, I thought, well, it might seem kind of enterprisey, but maybe we actually need to have a connection pool in Rails. And other people seemed to agree, so I sort of volunteered, even though I wasn't sure if I could actually commit the time. And so I started actually back probably in March or April of this year, and just doing a little bit here and there, and getting prodded every now and then by Michael Kosiarski and some of the other Rails members. And then this seemed to have a really good timing with the Google Summer of Code project that Josh Peek was working on this summer to actually make other parts of Rails thread safe. And so we both ended up working together a little bit, and were able to get all that work wrapped up together. And I'm actually, you know, so I finished up the work probably maybe in July or August or so, a little bit before RailsConf Berlin. And then once I was in Berlin, started to hear that people were starting to play with it, and there have actually been a few patches to it already, and even patches not by other people besides myself, and it sounds like that code is actually working fairly well.
Yeah,
to my own surprise.
That's interesting, because you said that you started this connection pool project in parallel with Josh Peek's efforts to the thread safety stuff. So
right.
Now I was thinking, because I thought that because of the thread safety, then you would need the connection pool.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, one process had only one connection anyway.
Right.
So why did you think that connection pool was a good idea before the thread safety efforts started?
I guess it was just a... really sure what prompted me to get there. I guess I'm trying to think about in my head the way I conceive of an application request lifecycle working is that you only use a database connection for a short time, and then you hand it back to something else. And in the JRuby world, running a Rails application with JRuby up until the connection pool, typically Active Record would basically create a connection that would hold on to it. When you run that in an application server world, usually the application server has a connection pool of its own, and
exactly.
It says, okay, here's a connection, now give it back to me when you're done. And with Rails, Rails would never hand the connection back. It would always hold on to it. And there are actually some connection pool implementations in various app servers that start to get worried, saying, "Oh well, I gave you this connection a while ago, and you never gave it back. Did it leak? Did something go wrong?" And so I think it was a confusing issue for app servers. And I think maybe that was probably one of the major pushes for going in that direction. And so with Rails having a connection pool of its own now, you can at least mimic that behavior. And now I'm just wrapping up some work with the Active Record JDBC adapter to make sure that it really kind of pushes that same model all the way through. So when you run with JDBC and you have a connection pool in your application server, the Rails connection pool will basically kind of delegate through and play well with the underlying connection pool.
Got it. Because let me try to pinpoint this so people that doesn't understand can figure this out. Because one Rails process usually has one of obviously Active Record configure, and it connects the database and it stays connected for the lifetime of this process.
Right. Right.
And if you want to handle multiple requests at once, you have to have multiple processes. So
right.
Each process will eat up one connection.
Right. That's
and,
true.
And with thread safety, it's even worse because without a connection pool, each process would handle multiple requests, and each request could end up eating another connection. So
we
would have an N times M problem of connections.
Right,
it would be overwhelming.
Right.
And with a connection pooling, at least in one process, you can have a connection pool of, at least, let's say, 5 connections open at maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you have 100 requests, it's going to reuse the connections.
Right,
but
right.
In JRuby, in an application server, when you are in just one JVM, without Rails being thread safe,
mm-hmm.
I think you can have multiple Rails instances
right.
running,
right.
but Active Record connected to the application server connection, native connection pooling system, I think. Is that correct?
Some patches to your application before Rails 2.2, you would still have that problem of it holding on to connections. I've published, I think, in some talks, and I can fish up the code and for anyone who's interested. But it basically, if you add an after dispatch hook to your application that says, "Okay, when the request is done, close the connection," and which doesn't actually mean close it; it just means, "Okay, we release it." Yeah, it gets released to the connection pool. So I mean, that's the way it would work in a JRuby on Rails app. But now that Rails has become closer to that model where Rails itself has the code in the dispatcher to say, "Okay, we're using Active Record. Let's check out the connection. Let's push the connection back after the request is done." It's going to be much easier to get your application going in that mode.
So now in JRuby, you can have because of thread safety stuff, with just one instance of Rails running that can handle multiple connections.
Right.
Is that a reality right now, or there are still some quirks or something?
No. Yeah. It definitely works. I won't guarantee that all the bugs are gone. I think we all realize that concurrent programming is somewhat of voodoo magic, and there'll probably be some bugs here and there that pop up, and hopefully they'll get fixed. But I think certainly within 6 months to a year after the 2.2 release, I would think things would start to be really solid. And we've already done some tests. I did some early tests with connection pooling and thread safety and running a single Rails application inside of a Java application server, and definitely seeing no big noticeable issues, and you can send many concurrent users at the one runtime, and it seems to behave okay. So I mean, that's obviously a small isolated environment, and we need to see how it works in real world applications, but hopefully we'll know more in a little while, but I'm excited to see where it goes.
You mainly do JRuby on Rails applications or normal Ruby on Rails that runs on MRI as well? Do you do both?
I mainly focus on JRuby on Rails applications at work. It's actually just a single one. It's not quite true. We do have several individual applications, but a single website, right? So they're tied together. But they all use JRuby. We do develop the Rails applications in a way that they can run on MRI. I guess I consider that a benefit of, you know, a development flexibility benefit that you can run in either place. Sometimes it's more convenient to run with MRI for quick scripts, things like tests. We do have a small knock against JRuby right now. That startup time and warm-up time is not as fast as it should be.
You had the warm-up.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. The JVM needs to warm up, and it uses a little more memory. So it's not always the most optimal tool for development, but that's also an area of improvement for JRuby.
And that's the next question. For me, as a Ruby on Rails developer that's used it to the MRI style of development, what kind of changes should I expect when I try to deliver a Ruby on Rails application on JRuby? Is there some things that I can't do, or some recommendations?
There are several options you have in terms of how you actually run the application, and they vary in number of steps. None of them are very complicated or deviate too much from your normal workflow. So the options in order of, you know, diverging from the normal MOTS Ruby style of development would be, the first one would be, okay, you just run JRuby with Mongrel, which isn't necessarily a recommended production deployment option, but it's available. Mongrel can run in JRuby. Typically the only difference you need to make is make some small changes to your database YML or your database configuration. Say, okay, here's the JDBC driver, and we have standard JDBC drivers for MySQL and Postgres and a couple other databases, so that all you have to do is just make some small changes to your database file, and now it uses the JDBC adapter, but you don't need to do anything else. So that's the first thing. The other thing you need to consider with JRuby is if you have any code that uses gems with native C extensions. And the most common ones are things like R Magic or Image Science, image processing libraries. And we do have some equivalents for those. There is an R Magic JRuby port. There's an Image Science compatible library we call Image Voodoo.
Didn't know about that. Image Voodoo has the same interface as
Image Science, exactly.
Okay.
Those are the common ones. People also tend to use hprcat quite a bit. That we have a hprcat. You can actually install hprcat, and it runs in JRuby just fine.
Hprcat just works?
Yes. It's a JRuby port, and it's in Ruby 4. It's the same place as the main gem.
Oh, there
the
is a
gem.
Port made in Java that depends on the C thing.
Right. So, yeah, it's basically the... we've actually seen this pattern with a couple of libraries. Mongrel is another one where... the authors of Mongrel and hprcat use this library called Regl.
Okay.
The state
state machine,
state
think,
machine
yeah.
library for generating parsers and so they both use these, and the Regl program can generate both a C and a Java backend, and so we're actually able to leverage that in both cases to create the ports. And so both of those libraries have the Java versions of them are maintained along with the C versions.
Oh, got it. And do you usually develop using the MRI and then you wrap it up in a WAR and deploy in JRuby?
Yeah,
or
definitely. That's probably what I personally do the most often. I think developing in JRuby is fine too. I guess it's just a personal thing that it works that way. I guess I wouldn't. If you start to see problems where suddenly your application is not behaving the same.
Okay.
It probably would be better to, this can be true even in my own case too. Sometimes it's good to look at your production deployment and your development environment and try to get them as close as possible. But I mean, as far I haven't had any really big issues with that at all that have forced me to take a closer look at that. So things seem to be compatible enough that you can work interchangeably across both versions and everything seems to be fine.
Yeah, and another thing is that while I was at RailsConf this year, I was talking to Charles, and the one thing that he said that in spite of their efforts and your efforts on making JRuby faster and faster at each release, even then the Rails applications were not getting that much faster with each release, and then maybe you would have to investigate inside the framework to see what was going on. So
yeah.
These latest efforts of connection pooling and what Josh Pickett did with thread safety, Does it actually make a big difference now running over JRuby?
Well, for performance, in terms of performance, it's not going to show a big gain just yet. I think we still have some ideas of things inside of JRuby core itself that we probably need to address to try to make the framework run faster. The performance gains have been kind of elusive just because you're looking at a full stack, and it's really hard to tease apart all the different parts of the stack and figure out what's contributing to the slowness. It's basically just a typical application profiling problem, and we've looked at it long enough. And we look at the profile of an application, and it's just a lot of little things that are contributing to the total time. So we've been long past the point where there's one major thing that's contributing to the slowdown.
Oh, you're the long tail of small things.
Yeah. So it's trying to figure out, you know, is there any low hanging fruit that we can find that would, you know, give us a big speed up? And in a lot of cases, it might require rewriting parts of JRuby to do things more efficiently. We've noticed that in a lot of cases the interpreter part of JRuby runs faster than the compiled version. So JRuby has just-in-time compiler that can convert Ruby code into Java bytecode. So parts of the application can run closer to the VM, but certain kinds of code don't seem to lend themselves to running very fast in that mode. So now we need to think about whether the JIT needs to be smarter about what kinds of code it compiles, or some ways of splitting up the application and trying to analyze what parts work better where, or maybe just making the compiler faster overall would be a good thing.
So there are still lots of stuff that you can explore in the JRuby side that's
definitely
coming up.
Right.
Okay. And I forgot to ask about the native stuff. Charles posted something about the FFI stuff.
Sure.
Are you aware of that and how it works? What's the benefits?
So the basic, really the big takeaway with FFI, as far as I can see, is the portability of Ruby libraries that do use native extensions. I think there's a good majority of Ruby gems and other libraries that use native extensions that don't necessarily have to write them in raw C code. They could just bind some functions in a C library,
mm-hmm.
and the FFI allows you to write all those bindings in Ruby. And the FFI library, one of the guys on the JRuby core team, Wayne Meissner, has been doing a really, really great job and actually providing not only a JRuby version of FFI, but also a Ruby 1.8 and Ruby 1.9 version of FFI as well. And so we're starting to get some interest from that. The API itself actually came from Rubinius, so Rubinius has this same API as well. The versions are not quite in sync across all four of those platforms, but the idea is that we have the FFI library out there today. People can install it as a gem and play with it, and we're hoping that library authors will look at it as a way of you know, making their code easier to maintain and also a lot more portable.
Internally, it's Java will use JNI or something like that to connect to the C stuff behind the scenes or something?
So yeah, as far as I understand it, there's some Java code that it uses some tricks with a library called JNA, which basically lets you write Java code to do those bindings. So the net effect of it is that we don't have to write JNI for Java, or you don't have to write C code for Java. It just gets done under the covers for you. There's a small translation layer that needs to handle all of that. And there's a small performance cost associated with it, but we've seen for a couple of initial applications that running through FFI is only about, you know, twice as slow as calling directly into a C extension, which is, I think, for most applications, it won't be too bad as long as you're not calling through the C API a lot, right?
Yeah. So, and another thing that I just remember that you were touching is the, it's kind of old, I think, is the RAC support for JRuby that allowed for other frameworks as well to connect it. Is it already stable? Are you evolving it? Are there new ideas around this?
It looks pretty stable right now. We're actually using it in production, and it seems to be working just fine. So the idea with JRuby RAC, as the project is called, is it's just a small bridge between the Java Servlet APIs and the RAC Ruby library, which is sort of a web server abstraction framework that now, you know, increasingly many Ruby web frameworks are using as a building block for their frameworks. So I wrote this that allows you to run Rails and Merb and Sinatra and Camping and virtually any rack application inside of a Java application server. And so the project has been pretty stable. I'm looking at a couple of things to try to push it in some new directions. One of the longstanding kind of problems in the Java side of or the jRuby side of the Rails world is we don't have a really solid solution for background problems. I mean, jRuby does have a native thread, so you could always spawn up a new thread and run that in the background. But prior to Rails 2.2, thread safety and connection pooling, it was kind of unsure of how Active Record would handle you spawning up a separate thread and running in the background and talking to the database. So it wasn't necessarily a recommended option until recently. And so I'm trying to look at other ways of doing this. And people in the Ruby world have looked a lot towards message queues as ways of doing asynchronous communication and backgrounding and things like that. And so I'm looking at Java equivalents of those libraries like JMS, which is pretty widely deployed in Java infrastructure, and trying to find ways of putting a nice Ruby wrapper around JMS. And the way I can see of doing that immediately that I'm trying to do with JRuby Rack is basically reuse that same pool of runtimes where your Rails or your web application is loaded inside of JRuby and allow JMS to basically tie in and out of that so you can send messages back to application code and basically, you know, run things out of band more easily. Or you could just say, well, I'm going to use it as an API and talk to some other process running somewhere else on the other end of the queue.
By the way, is the Rails application loaded up through Rack, or Rails has another path of loading it up over JRuby?
For JRuby Rack, I actually load up the Rails application through Rack. I haven't yet ported it to use the new Rack mechanics that are in Trunk right now. I use a slightly older version that of a Rack adapter for Rails that the Fused project was working on.
Okay.
And it seems to work fine for now. It probably could be improved, and I'm actually looking forward to porting it at some point once Rack becomes the more standard way of running Rails.
Yeah, and about the tooling stuff, over the last few years, we have been seeing tools like GoldSpike, Warbler. There are a lot of small tools that allows you to wrap it up in a WAR or to add support in the Rails application to connect it to even to make the database.yaml file more agnostic to JDBC or not.
Right, right.
And right now, what are the main tools that you need to have in order to transform your Rails application into a WAR file so you can deploy it? Is it just Warbler?
It's pretty much just Warbler, and it's doing actually the discussion we had a little earlier about, you know, what are the paths to using JRuby. I guess I didn't really finish that. We somehow got off track. But so, you know, once you have Active Record JDBC working and you have the native gems working, then you can run your application in JRuby using something like Mongrel or Webrick. Then beyond that, you can either use Glassfish, which is a Java-based application server. It's actually been rewritten in the most recent upcoming version, V3.
Oh, it's
a modular. It's being re-architected, and so it's a more modular server. So they can actually take some core parts of the Glassfish server, like the HTTP engine of Glassfish is called Grizzly. They're using that as a basis of making a very small, lightweight, but fast application server.
It's a synchronous library or something.
Yeah. And so they're using that as the base for a stripped-down version of Glassfish that can run just Rails or any Rack-based application. So Glassfish is it's still in the early stages. You can try it out. You can just gem install Glassfish.
So we can expect Glassfish to become even lighter in the future because they're stripping things out.
Right,
so you can run just Rails.
Exactly. Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and it looks to be a pretty attractive option, and it should be really easy to use because you just install it and run it the way you would run Mongrel or any other web servers.
But this is still under development.
It's still under development. Yeah, I think it's probably not quite production ready yet, but it's certainly worth trying out. And you know, if you find any problems with it, we'd love to get that feedback.
Is this the same Glassfish that comes bundled in the Glassfish gem that you can install? Because there is a Glassfish underscore gem that you can install.
Yes.
It. Is this the same Glassfish?
Yeah, that's the same one.
And do you recommend using that one instead of just making Rails and manually wrapping up with Warbler?
It depends on your needs. If you have a Java infrastructure already, and you probably already have an application server like the previous version of Glassfish or Tomcat or WebLogic or what have you, probably the WarFile is the way to go. And then in that case, Warbler is the tool that you use to make that happen. And it's pretty straightforward. I have some examples out there that I can point people to if they're interested in. But basically, you can out of the box create a WAR file with just a single command. And in some cases, you need to tweak a few things. There's a configuration file for Warbler where you can tell which files to include where and if there are any extra gems you need to include. And it takes care of bundling gems into the WAR file, too, if you don't vendorize them, of course.
Oh, by the way, do you use NetBeans to develop Rails applications? Or
I use NetBeans along with other standard tools like Emacs or TextMate. So I use whatever.
Mix and match.
Yeah, I use whatever seems appropriate for the task I'm doing. So if I'm doing a lot of joint Java and Ruby development, I'm probably doing it in NetBeans.
What do you feel about the current stage of NetBeans? Is it full feature now, or do you still miss some things?
Oh, I'm generally really impressed with NetBeans support. I think the only thing that's preventing me from using it full time is just sort of the security blanket of old tools that I've used for a long time. So I mean, I think for all practical purposes, NetBeans is pretty rock solid. Does everything you need. And so for people who like that environment where they can have their server console running in a little pane, and they can have a navigation window for their files and their classes and their methods and then a bunch of source code tabs open. NetBeans is a great environment for that.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for any IDE is because Ruby is dynamic, it's difficult to introspect what methods it should be using at any particular point. Do you think they were able to nail this and have a reliable autocomplete?
They're actually using some practical heuristics to try to find what methods are available.
Are you friends of Tor?
Yeah, I know Tor. Okay. I know Tor pretty well. I've talked to him before, and he's told me about some of the things that they do. And basically, he's able to get a pretty narrow, solid list of methods in certain cases where you see a single variable that's already been assigned, like a brand new object. So if you say, some variable v equals string dot new, or you create a string, and then a short time later in your code, you actually can code complete against that string, and it will prioritize the string methods at the top of the completion window. It doesn't completely filter away all the methods, but it does sort them in priority order. So it gets you pretty close in a lot of cases. There are some cases where it's completely off the mark, where there's really no surrounding context that it can leverage to make it better. And that's just going to be the way things go, I think, for Ruby-based IDEs. I don't know if anybody can really do any better than that without starting to try to find a way to use actual runtime information. I was actually talking to Tim Bray last night, and he has this idea that maybe somebody, some enterprising person out there, can actually go find a way to write either a plugin for NetBeans or extend some editor in such a way that you can actually run. And you may need to tinker with JRuby itself too, but you actually run your test suite and actually capture a runtime profile of all the call paths, right, and save that off in some some serialized form, and then rehydrate it later and use that to actually help you give you a more targeted list of options for your
Developers to make tests.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Write more tests and get better code completion.
Awesome. And in this whole scenario of Ruby boiling up as the next big thing, and several new VMs coming up as well, I think JRuby is the most stable VM apart from the MRI. But we have contenders such as Rubinius, Gemstone, even the Iron Ruby guys, but none of them are still ready for prime time.
Right.
What do you think about all of this many VMs going on?
Oh, I think in general it's great for the community. I've seen lots of creative discussions back and forth between different, both VM implementers, but also framework implementers. So, I mean, I'm not the kind of person who's going to make a controversial statement.
Okay.
From my perspective, I think we've seen lots of fruits of those interactions. It's going to continue to get better, and I certainly hope that anything that we've been able to do on the JRuby team doesn't necessarily give anybody the impression that we're doing it for ourselves. Obviously, the Java platform does create some boundaries that, you know, certain pieces of work that we are able to do don't necessarily benefit everyone else in the community, but we can still have discussions about what are the best way to do things, and things like FFI and and hopefully other projects like that. We can at least kind of go a level up from those and extract some common ideas and share those things as a way to move the entire Ruby language forward.
I think the best, at least the common denominator for all those projects, are the Ruby specs.
Absolutely.
So you've been working on the Ruby specs directly, or no?
I haven't been working on them very much. I think I maybe submitted one patch.
Okay.
Probably should be doing it more. I think we should all write more Ruby specs.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just another great example of a community project from originating from Rubinius, where everybody is just benefiting from it immensely. And so we really can't be thankful enough for projects like Ruby Spec. And we've actually leveraged Ruby Spec a lot on JRuby for almost since that project inception. So everybody wins.
Another cool thing that's coming, at least that feels to be coming up with, is the maglev that even Tim Bray mentioned today. But obviously it's not ready. But one thing that was very fun, it was having a friend of mine, you know Fabio Kung?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he made this demo using terracotta over JRuby. Have you tried it out?
I haven't tried it. No, it's awfully intriguing though. I'll have to. I don't remember if he's posted code for it or bundled it up.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Up.
Yeah.
As soon as he does, I certainly would check it out
because it opens.
What you can do.
It's very interesting because you have two JVMs that can connect between each other and share objects, and basically feels like Gemstone working. Obviously, it's not the same thing, but
right. It'd be interesting to take it and actually see how fast you can push data through
exactly.
it too, right? And actually say, okay, I'm gonna store a bunch of objects on this using this VM, and then maybe see how fast you can read them out on the other end and see. Try to get some idea of transactions.
I haven't
actually used it myself. No, I've always looked at it and thought that it's a very intriguing tool.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they've got quite a wide usage in the Java world. But it's always been one of those things where I haven't had an immediate practical need for it, so I haven't taken the time to look at it. But I've kept my eye on it.
Even inside, not only the Ruby world, but the JVM finally is starting to become the platform for many different languages.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have Jython, you have, Scala, you have several, Groovy, exactly.
Yeah.
Have you tried some of them? Have you talked to the maintainers of those projects? Do you exchange ideas?
Yeah, I've talked to a little bit some of them. There was a JVM language summit back in September, and I think third week of September, and there were a number of authors of these alternate languages for the VM present, and it was actually a really productive couple of days, lots of discussion happening. That's really more Charlie's domain. That's kind of like his big thing is language interop on the VM. And I'm kind of a passive bystander and looking at it with great interest and trying to get involved when I can, but realizing that I only have so much time in the day. But certainly there's lots of things to like about a lot of the new alternate VM languages. Clojure, Scala both have interesting concurrency features.
Exactly.
And I think there are even, that as a result of some of these new languages being implemented on the JVM, there are libraries coming out of the languages that can certainly be used from other languages. For example, Clojure has a bunch of immutable collections that somebody could say, oh, well, I'm going to use that as a basis for a nice functional programming framework in Ruby, but I'm going to use it from JRuby and use these existing libraries to create something entirely new that would might be a lot less friction than if you tried to do a similar thing with standard Ruby collections, for example.
Awesome. And finally, what would you say for people that are still kind of holding up, insecure about using JRuby? Mm-hmm. What could you tell them and recommend the usage, or do you have some recommendations or whatever?
Well, I'll just say that, you know, I'm personally using it in our daily operations on our team. I'm working as much as I can to give people options in the community, try to find best practices, try to push forward tools that do things, make it easy to use, make it stable. And if you try it out yourself and you have a new application that doesn't seem to fit into the tool set that we have, come join us and tell about what you're trying to do so we can find new ways of solving those problems as well and make Rails actually a really first-class citizen on the JVM.
Awesome. Finally, what's the URL for your blog again?
My blog is at blog.nicksieger.com. So if you just go, Nick Sieger is NickSieger. And I haven't been blogging there as much lately. I should do it much more. You can also catch me on Twitter. I've been tweeting quite a lot more lately. I'm Nick Sieger on Twitter as well. So, yeah, come start joining the conversation.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that was a great interview.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I really had a good time.
Okay, and I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.